To order. First, we'll take care of a little bit of business. In your packets, members, is a sheet from the American, says American Cancer Society, Matthew Flory, who was unable to testify last week on our health care cost containment bill, just for your attention. And someone like to move the minutes?
So move.
Okay, Representative Dempsey moves the minutes of the February 4th meeting. All those in favor of adopting the minutes, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? Motion prevails. Minutes are adopted. I want to give a little bit of a preview about today's hearing. Last fall, my staff and I met Dr. Kim, who is sitting before us today. He's a researcher and an associate professor at the University of Minnesota Medical School. And what he told us was very interesting and amazing. By combining some traditional psychological treatments with injections of special compounds, Dr. Kim and his colleagues have had impressive results in treating impulse control disorders and obsessive compulsive disorders. I have asked him and some of his patients here today to discuss his work. As we listen today, we may be thinking about how we could adopt some of his research and his work into our addictive treatment programs at a future date. So I ask you to help me in making that assessment. The impact in helping thousands of Minnesotans is clear, and so would be the potential savings for our state. Kleptomania, eating disorders, voyeurism, anxiety disorders, gambling addictions, panic attacks, and other obsessive-compulsive disorders that complicate treatments for alcohol and chemical dependency include those disorders that could be affected. Now, I may not know an opioid aggressor from an offsides defender, but Dr. Kim can provide specifics in those medical terms. Joining Dr. Kim will be some of his patients. I ask that we respect those witnesses today who wish to remain anonymous by referring to them as witness number one and so on. I also have asked that photographers would respect their privacy, so we have made sure that this would be somewhat of a private hearing. They are here to help us so we can help others. Dr. Kim, welcome to the committee.
Thank you very much. I'd like to thank Representative Baudreau, and I also want to thank Mr. Gildea for arranging this meeting. And I want to thank all of you who came here in early hour, and I want to thank all of my patients. I decided to bring only a few slides today, although I was asked to speak 30 minutes. I tried to spend a little less than that time and hopefully give a little more time to my patients. And as I see it, I think that's a much more important part of today's presentation. So I will quickly go over some of the slides to basically reflect our recent research findings. So the first slide you see on the screen is a rat brain where if I can find, okay, if you can see my arrow pointer, that is the most important region in the brain. And you see it in rat, mouse, and then in human brain. Pretty much the same location. It's located deep in the brain. And this is the most crucial structure in the brain linking human addictions. There are two kinds of, broadly speaking, there are two kinds of addictions. One would be drug addictions, second would be non-drug addictions. Some people call it behavioral addictions. So these people do not take any drugs, illicit drugs, yet the brain regions involved in their behavioral addictions are practically the same, even if they don't take any addictive medications. And the reason that happens, it's because if you look at this pink line, this is a highway between this first structure is called the ventral tegmental area, And then second area is a nucleus accumbens. It's really together with a ventral striatum or ventral pallidum. Together we call ventral striatum. These highway is between major brain structure, pretty much controls major functions of human addictions. If someone ingests morphine or heroin, it goes directly into this part. Without this part, they are not going to be dependent or they are addicted to the heroin. So this is the beginning point of human addiction. Now, opioid system is in the brain to begin with. And it's called endorphin. This endorphin behaves very much like the morphine, but they are structurally very different. Morphine is a plant alkaloid, and endorphin is a polypeptide. So they are very different compounds, but pharmacologically they are identical. So people take advantage of that pharmacological action and take opium and activate this part of the brain, and this is the so-called pleasure center. And they get excited, they can forget about all their frustrations, stress, and depression in their lives, and feel intense euphoria. That, of course, leads them to use it again and again, leading to drug addiction. Opioid system was created to do primarily two different functions. One is to control pain, second one is to control pleasure. Obviously, we're not interested in going into the pain system today, but they're wired separately. So we are only interested in pleasure system today, and that's the one linked to. And most of our research is based on this particular brain structure and chemicals involved in this structure. So as you read on the top, rationale for using opioid antagonists in the treatment of impulse control disorders. So out of number of chemical compounds, pharmacological compounds, we have chosen selective drugs to dampen the activity in this part of the area. Because if you do that, not only pleasure decreases, but also craving symptoms decrease, which is the core part of our research. From day one, I have struggled to do something to reduce human craving pharmacologically. So that is the central finding of our research. If you go to the human brain, before we launched this research, we spent many hours studying, if you can see my arrow pointer, OFC, orbital frontal cortex. This brain is located on top of our eyeballs, rock bottom of the frontal brain. Very, very important structure. Most of the daily incentives are recognized in this part of the brain. And in humans, this part of the brain is much more developed than lower animals. So this is where most of the good things in life are recognized. And this structure is so sophisticated, not only it recognizes an object, but also the degree of liking of that specific object varies to the internal physiological state. For example, if I'm hungry and I happen to pass a McDonald's, that McDonald's means a lot more to me at that moment than when I'm satiated. Then I may just pass by. So that particular function is regulated by in this part of the brain. Why is this part so important? Well, in impulse disorder, this part is critical because this is the part. Because if you study this part, we wrote elaborate anatomy paper in this part of the brain. If this part functions correctly, and this part is innervated by our visual input, tactile input, gustatory, olfactory, all sensory modalities arrive there, and they give information, and then this part of the brain decides where certain information is valid and important or not. If it's not, they throw that away. If it is, then they'll give you signal to the other part of the brain right here. I don't know whether you can see my arrow, where it triggers motivation, that this is something worthwhile pursuing. If you can look at the African wild animal, I think it's very easy to understand. When they see their prey, they really target at the prey and they pursue intensely. This is, we do exactly the same thing. And perhaps, you know, without this, I don't know, our daily life would be terribly boring because we're not going to be motivated to pursue what we need to pursue. We have a short-term goal, long-term goal. Most of these things are processed by this part of the brain. And of course, most of the patients we are studying, the field of psychiatry is really studying what is wrong. We don't study normal brain function. We study when something went wrong and how it's gone wrong and what's causing it. So in our patients, this part of the brain is not functioning correctly, and we are trying to pharmacologically control that so that their motivation would not be too strong. So in the case of gamblers or alcoholics, their craving is so strong, no matter how strong willpower they try to exert, they cannot control their craving. As a result, they directly translate into the behavior, such as driving to a bar or driving to a casino, the resulting in actual behavior, which is what bring in so much trouble in their daily lives. So that's some of the brain structures that participate in impulse disorder. And so this is my diagram to explain to you a little more graphically how really conditions like, if you look at the right side on the top, gambling, shoplifting, compulsive buying, and there are several other related disorders, how well and how these things are happening. Usually it starts from going back to the yellow color OFC. As I told you, OFC recognized incentive. I said here, the reward stimulus. Once they receive stimulus, then it triggers the ventral tegmental dopamine system, and this is where motivation is actually directly tied to the nucleus accumbens, and then it's called limbic locomotor system, and behavior is now organized by passing through the frontal brain. And then the person plan, you know, what kind of plan they are going to execute to get what they want. They may go to the shopping mall, they may go to the casino, so forth. So they engage in this behavior. So these behaviors are end product of a long chain of psychological and psychiatry, mental and physical phenomena that happens prior to the end product. Most of this behavior, if you look at gambling, shopping, buying, if you look at underneath, I wrote down hoarding. It's really the collecting behavior. These people, they really want to keep everything to themselves. They have trouble throwing things away. And the money is one of them. And so our really approach has always been to intervene right here pharmacologically. Once we dampen certain chemicals in this area, people's behavior stops. So we have evaluated a number of chemicals. If you look at pharmacological agents known to modulate human craving symptoms, opiate antagonists, the most effective agents from our extensive research applying number of compounds. And I knew this from day one. If you study the system I just presented to you, then you will know why, because it works directly right on the structure. So it is a highly effective and I would say most effective agent presently among different agents available. These are new compounds. The memantine just released by FDA, and the Eli Lilly compound, Eli Lilly Drug Company has a new compound. These medicines are what is called NMDA receptor antagonists, but they're different from the old family. These are much more flexible. They're reversible antagonists, so they don't damage the brain. And all these compounds have very strong craving-suppressing ability. We are going to study the first medicine pretty soon. Topiramate is only recently known. It's a seizure medicine recently known to suppress the seizures, and it has a very strong craving-suppressing activity. I'll be going down to Arizona in March discussing about it. There is a huge study planned for alcoholism and the pathological gambling disorder applying this medication. And we've tested years of serotonin receptor antagonist. There's a dopamine receptor antagonist, also a very promising compound, but the sponsoring companies are not really testing this extensively at this time. A camprosate about to be approved by FDA. So far it has not been approved. It's being used in Europe. It's a weak craving suppressing compound. It does some job, but it's not highly effective. we've been using this drug a long time, Lioresal, and muscle relaxant, but again, very weak muscle, the craving suppressant. Isradipine is a calcium channel blocker used for blood pressure, also suppresses some degree. And then the most commonly used serotonin uptake blocker like a Prozac, Zoloft, Paxil, so forth. But they're very weak suppressants. So these are some of the medicines we have tested. One of the reasons why we couldn't use naltrexone at the higher dose, I must share with you that naltrexone is the first family, that opioid antagonist, that it has been approved by FDA in 1994 to treat alcoholism. However, if you look at the marketplace, the sale of that drug is almost non-existent. All the experts in this field know that the drug has failed. The reason that recently I just wrote a letter to the American Journal of Psychiatry why we think the drug has failed. The number one, because of the low dose. We have shown a series of research studies we have published in which we have demonstrated that the 50 milligrams a day fails to suppress human craving. You have to use 150 milligrams a day. And that brings me to this slide where if you use higher dose of this medicine, it wasn't that other researchers didn't know that they used only 50 milligrams. It was because if you use a high dose, some of these patients suffer from liver enzyme elevations. For that reason, the researchers couldn't do that. But we discovered why that was happening. And it, as you see, this is a red colored number. You will see that when naltrexone is combined with over-the-counter pain medicine, if you look at here, it's much higher than the normal level. If you look at the naltrexone only group, that the liver enzymes that do not go up. We really took advantage of this, and once we discovered this, we never looked back. We began to restrict over-the-counter pain medicine from these patients, and we started to give 150 milligrams a day, and as you hear from these patients today, patients who take that amount of medicine, their cravings are pretty much gone, and that means they just come out of the disease. We never looked back once we discovered this. We happened to think this was an important step forward for our research. And we recently went over our outpatient chart involving 39 patients. We came up with the same finding, that it is very safe. We did not find a single patient whose liver enzyme went up. And this is, we are going to submit this paper for publication.
Dr. Kim, if you just stay about 6 inches away from the mic, it's, with the volume is good. Just like you were before is perfect.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And this is one of the first studies that we conducted. And I brought this slide to show you how effective opioid antagonists such as naltrexone is in impulse-driven disorders. If you look at the baseline level of urge strength, urge frequency, thought frequency, and subjective disturbance, distress, that it just and the p-values are very, very good, suggesting that naltrexone is a highly effective agent. But you have to target craving-driven subjects. That has not been done in alcoholism research. That if you review all published alcoholism research papers, researchers have targeted alcoholism itself as long as they qualified for diagnosis, DSM-4 diagnosis, which is a standard diagnostic criteria in psychiatry. And as you know, the alcoholics, some drink because they're depressed, others drink because they're lonely. There are a number of different reasons why people drink, but they enrolled all of them and hoping that naltrexone will treat them. And my theory from the beginning has been that what naltrexone does is to really kill the cravings. They're not going to treat alcoholism. So I have advocated that if you're going to use naltrexone, you have to select subset of alcoholics who have craving symptoms. In fact, some researchers, having conducted research studies, they go back to the study, they analyze the urge data to find out if naltrexone reduced urge symptoms without ensuring that there were craving symptoms at the beginning of the study. Because if you don't present the craving, naltrexone can't do anything about it. So as a result, the study findings have been very conflicting. And so all our research, we don't do study that way. We target only, so we never claim we can stop all gamblers, all alcoholics. We claim only stopping craving alcoholics. Now, when it comes to that particular subset, our finding has been very impressive. And we are continuing to pursue. We are currently involved in a large NIH-funded study examining exactly that issue. And those two, I believe, are the two most important reasons why present alcoholism treatment has failed. That is a dosage failure. Second, they were trying to treat all alcoholics instead of subset of alcoholics. You have a question?
Representative Bradley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yes, Dr. Kim, how do you differentiate at the point which I think you describe it as craving versus having a gambling or an alcohol problem?
That we have developed a scale where we can assess right from the outset what kind of craving an individual. We have an education sheet, orientation sheet, where I go one by one myself to tell them what the cravings are so that they fully understand what I'm asking. And number two, once that's done, then we have a scale we have developed, validated, and published. And we use that scale to show how severe craving symptoms a given individual has. And then if people don't have it, we don't enroll them. Now, these are the patients, same patients who have strong family history. They have a strong genetic background. Now, alcoholism gene and gambling gene, they inherit together. So I have seen over 2,000 gamblers in Minneapolis now. And when you collect this data systematically, it's very impressive. Almost every time when you meet someone craving, they have a strong family history of either drinking or gambling or both. So that's the way we assess these cases
Representative Bradley. Thank you, Madam Chair. Dr. Kennan, I'm sort of curious if you had people who had, let's say, either gambling or alcohol as a problem, what proportion do you typically see who actually have this craving that you described?
Craving groups are the majority. They will occupy 60-70% of the entire population. And also, they are the ones who end up in the hospitalization, long-term treatment. They are the ones who go into the operations and things like that. The early onset, the disease life cycle is much different from late onset. If somebody starts to gamble at age 30, 40, 50, we don't really worry about them nearly as much. They're not going to sell their house, go bankrupt, and use the retirement. They rarely do that. On the other hand, if somebody starts to gamble from age 7, they start to play cards. Many of them start before age 10. By teenage, they're already advanced. And then when these children grow up, future impact in occupation, everything, family life, it is so big. That we believe we can prevent that, early prevention. Right? Because our treatment, we don't treat forever. We treat no more than 2-3 years and we stop the treatment. And many of them seem to do fine. We have a patients now doing great for 6-7 years now.
Thank you.
And Dr. Kim has a list of, an impressive list of his publications in our packet too. It's quite lengthy. Amazing. How many years have you been working on this, Dr. Kim?
My obsessive compulsive disorder research goes back 20 years, and that my research in the brain has led me to discover this gambling and impulse control, where we can apply same principle to alcoholism, which I really think is important. I mean, medically speaking, that's terribly important. Alcoholism, 13% of the population, and let's say each family has 4 members, roughly about half of the entire United States population is affected by serious drinking problem. Knowing the magnitude of this problem, and also knowing that if correct treatment is applied, early intervention, and treat them, and you'll hear one gentleman here, you'll hear his story, how his drinking problem stopped with this treatment. I think impact is large. So this slide shows once again how effectively this medicine controls urges. And this is the first double-blind study, and very impressive results. If you look at the I don't know. I don't think I see here. Much improved in this study, in the naltrexone group is much to very much improved is 75%. Placebo is 24%. In any drug treatment, anybody who do a lot of clinical trials know this is not ordinary study. It's an exceptional study, and I know why. Because we are treating much more upstream disease process. We're not treating down in the symptom level. We are treating much more pathophysiological level. That's why we believe we are getting such a dramatic result. And we recently completed a multi-site study using another drug like naltrexone. It's almost identical drug. It was 15 centers in this country. Once again, if you look at the p-value, it's very impressive findings. We have a very similar finding. But in this study, we enrolled only the craving-driven gamblers. And we reviewed outpatient record from the university outpatient clinic. If you look at this naltrexone group, 90% improvement. 90% improvement, whereas we use the serotonin drugs, 45%. So we know it's highly selective in terms of clinical efficacy. And then we've tried a number of other drugs, like SSRI. This is one multi-center SSRI study. There's no significant statistical the benefits. So I think that's...
Okay, Dr. Kim, are there any questions for at this point for Dr. Kim before we get to the witnesses? Representative Opatz.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. Dr. Kim, is this the drug that you're talking about, is it in experimental stage, or is it now been approved by the FDA and being used? Or
approved by FDA in 1994.
Oh, okay.
The FDA approved only, it stipulated to 50 milligrams a day. Because of a risk of liver enzyme elevations, but we found how we can use it higher dose by restricting over-the-counter pain medicine, and so that's why we have been able to use a higher dose. That's what really suppressed the craving now. At the 50, we found out it doesn't, and we now know why that treatment has not worked in alcoholism, because the doctors are not using it.
Representative Samuelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Dr. Kim, I'm wondering if there are other side effects to this medication other than the things that you talked about, especially side effects that would have a impact on the person taking the drug. Dr. Kim.
Yes. First week, they're very common. 50% of the patients develop nausea. Many patients mild nausea. A few patients develop strong nausea. Then we always give nausea medicine. It lasts several days. From second week, this drug almost very few side effects. Once they survive the first week, that's why we give small dose during the first week. And from second week, we are currently involved in a study where whenever we see after first week, whenever we ask side effects, it's almost always no. That's a typical fine. So it's a well-tolerated drug.
Okay, thank you. Representative Bradley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Maybe as a little bit of a follow-up to Representative Opat's question, so there's FDA approval, at least on some of these. But how about application? I don't recall in my visits to places that provide treatment centers for some of these disorders hearing much about use of pharmacological solutions. Are any of these in sort of application in our treatment programs anywhere?
Yes, the university. Our chairman, Dr. Schultz, has set up impulse control disorder clinic where I serve as a director. And so we exclusively treat impulse control disorder patients. So that means the gambling patients, kleptomania, compulsive shopping, and other related disorders. And I accept alcoholism patients because I seem to treat them so effectively.
Madam Chair,
so badly.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Dr. Kim. How about outside of the University of Minnesota in other?
It's very few centers in the nation. The experts in this area, it's just the beginning field.
Okay, thank you.
Representative Samuelson or Soderstrom.
Madam Chair, Dr. Kim, I would just like to know how, maybe you can't tell me this, how costly this drug is, and then do they stay on this drug forever?
Two to 3 years.
Two to 3 years.
And the cost in this treatment will be so low It cannot even be compared to any existing program, because what we're talking about, the not 2-3 year treatment cost, we're talking about lifetime cost. If you leave the alcoholism alone, imagine how many times they end up in the hospital. And imagine emergency room visit, job, you know, when you add all those up. On the other hand, if you treat those naltrexone 2-3 years, some of them, their craving comes back, and we have to treat them another 6 months. That's the way we do. Then eventually they get off. And then many of them seem to do just great for the rest of their lives. And so cost, there's just absolutely no comparison.
Dr. Kim, how many patients have you treated? And in your treatment, perhaps you could explain how that treatment is brought forth. Excuse me. I understand that you use psychologists as well, components to the treatment. Perhaps you could explain that to the committee.
Yes. Most of the psychiatric problem, I happen to focus on the biological side. That doesn't mean there's no psychological. Brain is designed to interact with the environment. So it would be a mistake if somebody thinks that the chemicals run everything. So it's always a combined function. So we always incorporate the psychological side. And we happen to be lucky enough to have one of the best in the nation, Dr. Matt Kushner. He's well known in the nation in this field. So he and I work like a brother. And we do a lot of things together, and we really teamed up. And I shared with him the other day, and we're already doing so much things together, research together, clinically together. He was very excited. I mean, I believe we can really develop a very nice treatment program.
Well, and Dr. Kim, I believe you've been referred to as a national expert as well. I know that you've been called in different instances by the media trying to explain behavior of certain people. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. Representative Abler.
Thanks, Madam Chair. Just briefly, has there been resistance to this? Are people embracing your work? Is the state behind it? It seems like you're onto something here, and are we doing a lot of it, or is there some problems with that?
In fact, I'm a little bit scared of what I'm doing right now. And that's the honest feeling, because I always felt something like this should be done quietly. And as you know, in academic world, we don't run around tell people, other than academic conference, where we publish in professional journals and we go to professional meetings, things like that. So most of us, what we do are hidden. And something like this go up has a good side and also a bad side. So I need to conduct myself carefully. I don't want to jump up and down, you know. Our really goal is to do studies and present solutions to the patients, and that's really what we are hired to do.
But Madam Chair,
Representative Abler,
so this is kind of a pilot, small project. Is that right?
And we are gone beyond the pilot. We already have gone through all the pilot stages, and we are currently involved in, as I showed you on the slide, we already finished large multi-site study in gambling, and I wrote that protocol. So I am currently involved in very large the multi-dosing, dose-finding, gambling, double-blind study. The studies like that, you know, cost over $500,000, so it's not a small project for us. So we are really working hard, and it's definitely advanced. Our work has now been well recognized in the professional field.
Okay. Representative Samuelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Dr. Kim, I'd like to know a little more about your sample as far as maybe age, ethnic diversity, male or female.
Dr. Kim. The average age is right around 40, and male female has always been male preponderance. It was a 2-to-1.
Okay.
Now in our study, male female often equals, because very often when we advertise, the more females come forward, And that's been the case not only in gambling but also other diseases. But studies have shown that, but although all the old studies show 2-to-1 ratio male preponderance, that's changing. It's shocking. You find how many females are gambling. Especially when you interview them, it's just really shocking. Yeah, they gamble a lot.
Well, Madam Sanderson.
Madam Chair, in regards to ethnic diversity.
Oh, I'm Dr. sorry. Kim. That is mostly Caucasian, but we have black, we have Asian, but and I've been doing clinical research a long time. It's almost always that case. It's the Caucasians come for over 90%.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Pyle.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Dr. Kim, if the efficacy of this treatment has been proven, and you and your peers have discussed this, and it's well known, then I'm wondering why it's not being used more, and what, so maybe you can explain to us what the barriers are that are preventing this from being.
The first barrier is FDA approval. That this indication, naltrexone being indicated for gambling disorder, has not been done. To do that, a company has to sponsor. They usually have to spend millions of dollars, and no company will do that for this compound because the patent has expired long ago. So there's no incentive to conduct, large-scale studies. So as a result, the drugs like this, unless something else happens, are highly unlikely going to the national scale and spreading very fast because somebody has to promote that, and there is no sponsoring organization doing that job.
Okay, seeing no further questions, I think we should have the witnesses come up and hear from them. So Dr. Kim, whoever you have, can bring them up one or two at a time, whatever works the best. And we're very grateful for your willingness to come and provide some substantiation to Dr. Kim's work. We'll refer to you as witness number one.
That's fine.
Okay. Good morning, and welcome to the committee today.
Good morning. Thank you. Dr. Kim says he doesn't want to jump up and down. I'll jump up and down for him. I'm a great fan of his.
If you could move just a little bit closer to the microphone. Okay. Not.
I am a kleptomaniac.
Okay.
And, or at least I hope, maybe a former kleptomaniac. I don't know what started it. I just know that 6 or 7 years ago, I started stealing. I started feeling this compulsion to steal. I've been asked many times by people who know me, what does the compulsion feel like? I can't tell you. It is just overwhelming. You just have to do it. There is no way you can sit and say, I'll put it off till tomorrow. You just don't do that. You just, once it's there, you go out and steal. Once I started stealing, I was stealing every day and everything for 2 years. I got caught. I wasn't that good. And I got put, I got caught eight or nine times. 4 times I got put caught by the police and put in into jail and put charged with it so that I had to go to court. That didn't make any difference. I know the first time I went to court, I got put on probation for 30 days, and on the way home, I went to Steers and stole the television. I had to. I saw an advertisement that Dr. Kim had put in the paper for kleptomaniacs who wanted to volunteer for a study, and I volunteered. He put me on naltrexone and Paxil. In about 2 weeks, 2-3 weeks, the urge was gone. It's never come back. I've never been tempted. I thought about it, but I've never been tempted. By thinking about it, I mean, you walk in the store and you say, this will be so easy to walk out with, but don't worry about it. it did miracles within 2-3 weeks. I don't know. I can't think of anything else in my life that I can apply that would change my behavior other than the drug, because nothing really significant changed. For 2 or 3 weeks after I started taking the drug, I had to be chaperoned by my children because they found out about it and they wouldn't let me go to the store alone. But after that, the craving just never came back. Never. It saved my life.
Appreciate your testimony. So you have your life back and your family is happy.
Yeah, that's two of them here today.
Wonderful. Is there any particular questions? Would it be okay if some of our members asked a question of you?
They want to, certainly.
Representative Bradley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Sir, are you then going to need to take whatever drugs that you were talking about? Are you going to need to continue to take those in your case?
No,
sir.
I'm still under Dr. Kim's care, and if there is an end to it, I assume it's coming up. It'll be about 3 years coming up fairly soon, 3 or 4 years. So, and he may take me off. I don't know. But we just have to wait and see.
Thank you.
Representative Powell.
My question was answered, Madam Chair. Thank you.
Representative Smith.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Witness number one, the question was previously asked, and the doctor didn't hang a dollar amount on it. Are you currently taking the drug? And if so, what is the dollar cost per month, if you know, and if you're not paying it, who is? Can you help me out with that?
I get my medications through the VA, and they have a set charge of $7 a prescription. So I don't know what the cost is.
Madam Chair, witness number one, that charge to you sounds like it may be a copay or something. What is the frequency of the copay or the refilling of it?
You get prescriptions, monthly prescriptions through the VA.
Okay.
Every month.
Thank you.
Thank you. I see no other questions. Thank you very much for telling us some of your story. Good luck to you. Good morning.
Good morning.
Can we call you number two?
There you go.
Okay. Witness number two, good morning. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. I'm a 45-year-old married, self-employed sales representative. I was a compulsive gambler and saw a special on TV regarding Dr. Kim's studies, and they did list a phone number. I gave a call. I was very fortunate that he welcomed me into his studies. And my problem started around, I believe it was 1996. And I was on 175 milligrams of naltrexone. So that'd be like 3.5 doses. And before I forget, if anybody has any questions regarding side effects or the costs, I can refer back to that too, and it's probably changed a lot now because I'm currently not on the medicine. But my situation was pretty severe. I felt I was to the point where I was entertaining suicide. I don't know if I could come to that conclusion or not, but it was pretty bad. In the winter time, I'm in the bicycle business is the field that I'm in, and I have a lot of, sometimes, not nowadays, I guess, but back when I was gambling, I had a lot of extra free time in the winter time, and I spent basically, my job was gambling during the day, almost every single day, and I was probably spending about $3,000 a day. That was a pretty typical number. And at the peak of my problem, I had winning slips for high stakes slots for like $70,000 in 1 year. And I know there's other folks that have problems much beyond where I've been, and but mine was pretty severe. And I just didn't feel like there was any hope. I just, the same thing every day. I live like up past Forest Lake, right off the freeway. It was very convenient to run up to the Grand Casino. It was, you know, less than an hour away, 50-minute drive. And I spent my days up there, and I had some level of success on the high slots and a lot of disappointing days as well. So, but after I returned home each day, I spent probably 90% of my time thinking about how I was going to approach the next day, you know, in gambling, you know, which machine I was going to go to, how much I was going to spend, how I was going to go. It was basically, that's all I thought about. And it was, and I don't have any kids. I'm married, been married for 16 years to the same woman. I don't know how she stuck with me through this whole thing. I'm very, very fortunate. And she could tell, too, that my mind was totally just focused on the gambling. And basically, I could have my house paid off right now, and I have a mortgage that's over $100,000 still, which is so disappointing to look back on all that. But I have my life, too, like the first gentleman mentioned. And it's a pretty normal lifestyle, and I might not be sitting here today, maybe, if I didn't meet Dr. Kim and get on this very wonderful medicine as far as I'm concerned. But I think that's pretty much all I have to say, unless there's some specific questions regarding the side effects or the costs, stuff like that.
Do members have any questions? Representative Dempsey.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My question, Mr. Tu, would be, were you addicted because of the availability of gambling facilities, or was it, would it have been there if there wasn't any gambling?
Sir?
That's a great question for me, considering I cover five states for my job. I cover Minnesota, Wisconsin, North and South Dakota, and Iowa, and there are casinos everywhere in that area, and I had to drive by them all the time, and it was horrible. I'm on my own. Nobody's there watching over me. It was extremely tempting to not do my job, call on independent bicycle retailers and go to the casino instead. And in some cases, when the problem existed, I would do exactly that. Instead of making a sales call, I would stop at the casino instead. And the only way I make money is to sell product. I'm 100% commission and pay all my own expenses. So it was a compulsive gambling disorder, very strong urge that I don't even really think about anymore. It's crazy that it can go from that degree of strength to what it is today, because once in a while it'll just pass through my mind, the thought about it, but then it's right back onto probably something that work related again now. So I mean, I'm just, I guess my focus has been redirected or something. I don't know how to explain it, but it's working, so that's all I care about.
You're just happy that there's a remarkable change.
Like I say, I seriously, you know, you see stuff on the news. I don't know, I'd be sitting here today. It was that bad. So,
if I may ask, were you involved or did you attempt to try other treatment options prior to your connection with Dr. Kim?
I did not, and I'm kind of a stubborn individual, and it would take something this remarkable to motivate me, because, you know, you look like, and I hope nobody takes offense to this statement, but, you know, like the Alcohol Anonymous type, those groups, I guess I personally don't believe very strongly in that type of an arrangement, so I don't know how effective that would be for me in that. I don't have a lot of confidence that I was put in that setting that it would be very effective for me.
Sure. Representative Samuelson.
as a question.
Madam Chair, my question was just answered. Thank you.
Representative Moines.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Kind of following up on Representative Dempsey's question, Ms. Patu, he asked about the availability, I think, or primarily focusing on casinos. Were you also doing other forms of gambling, horse racing, pull tabs, that kind of thing?
I was not. I have the blackjack thing was in there a little bit, but I fell victim to the slot thing, and the way that Dr. Kim related that, it was immediate reward when it did happen, and that's probably, in looking back, that's exactly what happened. I played, high-stakes slots, $5, and $25. Some of those were multiple denominations. So, you could put a $25 machine might have, it, in fact, the one that I was playing, you could go up to $50 one time, one pull or one push of the button. So when you did hit, it could pay some pretty significant jackpots. But I did not, so I don't know.
I don't see any other questions. I appreciate you coming today and your patience with the questions we're asking you.
You're welcome.
Good luck to you.
Thank you.
Good morning, witness number three.
Thank you.
Thank you for coming.
Thank you. I'm 58 years old. I've probably been an active alcoholic for 30 years of my life, hardcore. I've been through 6, 7, 8 treatment centers. I've been to detox probably a dozen times in Plymouth. I've been on that pill that you get violently sick. I forget the name of it now. That was good for 4 days at North Memorial. I drank. It was uncontrollable. I have an urge. I had urge for years. Uncontrollable urge. And I always thought there's something. I need something to take the edge off. Just something to make it a fair fight. It wasn't. I was addicted. I craved booze. I go by a liquor store and I just stare at it. I stare at the bottles and. A friend told me about, she worked at a nurse at North Memorial, told me about Dr. Kim's success he was having. And I, well, that's too good to be true. That's, but anything that's too good to be true, isn't. But she said, if I make an appointment for you, will you go? And I promised her I would. And it was 2 weeks or 2 months, I think, later. I had to wait 2 months. And I thought, well, he's pretty arrogant, if he wants me to quit. Anyway. And wait 2 months, but I went and talked to him. I started on the pill. I think for 3 days I had a dry mouth. That was the only drawback. I've been on it for going into my fifth year now. I'm a success story, I guess. My whole life, 90% of it during the days of those 30 years was thinking about booze or going out or hanging with people that did, or just going on a real good binge for 3 days. But I was self-employed. I'm a mechanical contractor in Minnesota. I had a broken down truck, half the time no insurance. You think of ways to get out of work so you can drink. You plan your whole life around drinking. That's because it's an instant fix right here. I got on the pill, and now I've been on it for, I never think about booze. It's like I don't smoke. I don't think I don't smoke. I just don't. I don't even think about it. You can put a, I don't know what the pill does. You can put a bottle of booze in front of me. It could be a bottle of ketchup as far as I'm concerned. Nothing registers. When I look at booze, no good memories come, none of that. It's kind of ironic. My girlfriend, she lives with me for the past 3 years. She owns 3 bars in Minnesota. And she got 27 employees, and we go check everything and get the book work and all that. And I spend time in the bars, and nothing. I just look at people. It's a sad place for me. I mean, it's like they have a black cloud over their head, or everybody's happy and they aren't. Your guts are turning inside. You want to quit and you can't. I had a monkey on my back for years. And, Now I got four trucks, new trucks, four guys. We're in the union. I take vacations every couple of weeks. Saturday morning I go to Aruba, whatever it is, for a week. Life is wonderful. It's great. Bought a motorcycle, pay cash for it. It's I just don't want anything to change. And I, after a year into it, I wondered, why isn't this on the front page of every newspaper and magazine in the country? I don't understand it, you know. But he saved my life, and it just works for me. It's $100 a month, big deal. I'd pay 10 times that for. But you can't realize if you stop somebody from drinking, about myself, my experience anyway, there's so much productivity and inside of people that is lost. I mean, when I stop drinking, you have to do something else. I was more channeled towards, you know, a goal of getting certain things. I had people tell me all my life, you know, you're so talented. Why are you drinking yourself to death? You're going to be dead. I tried drinking myself to death. I always came out of it. I don't know why. It's just somebody upstairs wants me around for a while, I guess. But I'm a veteran. I've done everything right all my life. But when the booze just, there was absolutely, it wasn't a fair fight. And now it's so easy. I take a pill every morning. That's all. I take it with the rest of my pills. Everybody's got, you know, I got a 7-day little thing and take my one a day vitamin. That's been with it. That's all. And my girlfriend, she drank all of her life. The last 3 years, she hasn't drank at all. She said, "You showed me a better way to live." We have projects. When she moved in the house, she called it a hellhole. You know, a guy living by himself. I had a beautiful house, but it was just on a lake, but it just was run down. It was an old farmhouse. We've done every room. She put a swimming pool in the backyard. We spend most of our time working on spare time on the house. We do one project, take a room, a room at a time. Home Depot is our second home. We kid about it. I didn't think life would be this way. You know, it's great. I don't like to brag about it. Here's an exception to the rule. I'm a realist. I know life is tough and everybody has their problems, and I'm not down on it. That's why AA never worked for me. It just didn't work. I had 3 DWIs. I had to go to all of those, trip to the AA meetings, and did nothing for me. I'm not a whiner. I'm not a complainer. Just nothing happened. The treatment centers don't work. That's my opinion. They don't work. The people that I know got religion when they were in treatment. And that's the only way they got, 10% or 12% got real religious. Treatment never worked for me. 2 weeks, I was back, right back where I was before. I don't know, I can't say enough good about it. I'm on cloud nine. But I don't know. To me, it works, and that's all I care about. I don't even care how. I know the chemical imbalance or something over your right eye, and it numbs the circuitry or whatever. Whatever it is, it works for me, and I don't care.
You don't care. Just give me the pill.
Heavy question.
We're very excited to hear that your life has dramatically changed, and it's more productive. And we see us smiling. That's just because we're happy for you.
Just a note about, I was thinking when he was speaking, that about going to a casino. I never went to a casino if it didn't have booze. I didn't go anywhere unless it had booze. I'd go to Hinckley or something, or just for the booze. I didn't go out to go to a show or stuff like that. I'd go out and drink. That was my, you know, it's bad news. I mean, it just gets, it's terrible. It starts out when you're young. The high points are up here and the low is down here, and then when the older you get, it just reverses itself. The hangovers and the head in the toilet and just feeling like, you know, you're going to die for 3 days. It just wasn't worth it. I just keep drinking so I wouldn't have to come out of it. But to me, I look back and it's just a dream. It's something, a book I read or something, my life. But I wasted all those years. I'm 58 years old. You know, at 53, I started really living. What I could have accomplished, all of that, all that productivity lost, you know, all that money down the drain that I could have made, or happiness. The money isn't that big, but you're just yourself, your pride, your self-confidence. You don't feel like, what the hell's wrong with me? I can't even. I see people have one drink and leave their drink after a meal, and they must be crazy. What did they leave that for? I drink it all day. I'm just gone. You know, when I start, I'm gone. But the craving is just overwhelming. I say one out of ten in America has a family or knows somebody or they are themselves. But people hide it, and it's a shame. I'm ashamed to, you know, I don't admit this. I admit it to my other half and that, but I'm a productive part of society now, and I love it.
Well, we appreciate you coming and letting us know. You can help other people.
Thank you.
Are there any questions for witness number three? Seeing none, we wish you well, and you may be 58, but you could be 88. So you still have some decades, hopefully, left. Yeah.
Thank you.
Go out and enjoy life. Dr. Kim, do you have others? Good morning.
Good morning.
We're very grateful for you to be here. Witness number four.
I'm glad to be here. Thank you. The last few years for me have been difficult. 2 years ago, my wife had asked me to leave the house. I have four children. A year ago, my 20-year marriage ended. 2 years ago, my 15-year career in banking ended. So my life has been turned around inside and out, upside down, all that. I've had a year, I've had a lifetime of shopping addiction, which pretty much has been under control. I've been able to afford it. It's been probably the last 6 years that the kleptomania has changed things. And it's through that that it's caused my life to change dramatically. I'm a past bank president. The kleptomania and bank presidents don't mix. And the kleptomania is a result of intense cravings, impulse control, cravings and impulse that are absolutely impossible to control or to stop. I have seen and know it's a problem. I have seen in the last 5 years up to 10 different doctors, medical doctors, therapists, psychiatrists, all kinds of doctors. I've done this on my own, knowing that it's a problem. I have had absolutely no luck with these doctors. I have spent thousands of my own dollars trying to seek help. I have been a model patient. I have followed through with all of their directives, but I have gained nothing from these people. I have excellent medical coverage through the banks in which I've worked. I have excellent medical coverage, and through that, I've been able to get and seek top medical coverage. And I've even gone beyond that and have spent my own money with medical coverage and doctors outside of that. Now, one would think that you could get and obtain through all of this the required help that I needed. Knowing the difference between right and wrong, I knew I had a problem. I'm an educated individual, and I couldn't find it. And I was on a 5-year mission to seek help. My wife knew I needed help. My kids knew I needed help. And I knew I needed help. Unfortunately, there was no help. And my brother and his wife gave me a call one day, and this was just a year ago, and they were doing some research on the internet and found Dr. Kim's name and his association with the U of M, and that he was doing work with impulse control. And I thought, okay, impulse control, that's what I need. So I gave his office a call, and I was very hopeful, and I was just, God, I got to get an appointment there. And I remember thinking, okay, say the right thing. Say it's impulse control. I got to get in. And I did get in. I did get an appointment. And I met with an associate of his. And then did meet finally with Dr. Kim. And I explained to him my problems, my addiction to shopping, which led to kleptomania. And he prescribed, and I gave him my long history and blah, 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 and family history and all of that, and shared with him a little bit of my turmoils that led to this and so forth. And he said, well, therapy and all that stuff, that's not going to do anything. I said, I know. And he says, here, I'll give you a medicine. And I said, oh, yeah, more medicine. So I had absolutely no faith that this pill would do anything. But I'm willing to do anything. So I took the pill, and he said, here, try this for 30 days and go half dosage for the first week or two, and you won't see any effects for 3 or 4 weeks. Oh, that's my cell phone. And so I did. And I tried it and did it. And the remarkable thing is probably within 2 weeks, I felt this odd thing. I felt a change. I was driven daily with this huge urge that overtook my life for years and years and years. And these urges were so strong and so pervasive that throughout every day, morning, noon, and night, my life was structured around shopping. My day would be structured with business lunches. Okay, this lunch would be near Southdale, so I could quickly stop in and do this and blah, blah, blah. And it wasn't about, it was never about the thing. It was never about the stuff. It was about stopping the urge. And the only way to stop the urge was to either buy it or steal it. Because the urge was so pervasive, it wouldn't go away unless I stopped it. But that urge would just reappear time after time after time. So today, I go shopping. You have to go shopping. You have to eat. You have to buy stuff. But it's without the urge. And so it's quieted, it's deadened that urge. So I can still go shopping, but it doesn't mean I have to buy anything. And it's through Dr. Kim's efforts, and it's through this drug. And the drug that I take isn't naltrexone. It happens to be a different drug. I don't care what drug it is, but it works. And it's through his efforts and through this drug that it had an immediate effect. And I could tell, and I noticed that it was an immediate effect after 2 weeks. And I came back after 30-day trial and visited with him and took 20 minutes, and I just talked for 20 minutes and told him that I wish I would have met him 5 years ago, because it would have saved my marriage. It would have saved my job. And he had understood, and he went through with me what he went through with you today. I understand the brain impulse and how the brain works and all of that, and that's exactly what I felt. So I feel hopeful. It has restored my integrity. I had lost my integrity through all of this. It's very shameful. It's not fun to talk about. But it has brought me hope that I can now, I have my life back. I have 4 kids. They know about this. That wasn't a whole lot of fun to have that discussion with them. But they need to understand it. They do understand it. It's a disease. It's a brain disease. The brain has deep inroads that the brain carves out, and the impulses in my brain weren't working right. And I couldn't do it myself. I remember these old doctors I would visit with. You know what they'd say? They'd say, well, you've got to stop doing that. That's illegal work. You've got to stop going into the stores and steal. And I'd say, you're absolutely right. I got to stop doing that. Well, you can't do that anymore. That's their advice.
I appreciate your testimony. Is there any questions for witness number four? I see none. Thank you for sharing your story, and good luck to you.
Thank you.
Dr. Kim, is that? Do you have other witnesses, or is that? Okay. Would you like to return to the table in case there are other questions? I don't know if there are. I did want to ask you. I believe in our discussion, you had mentioned about your treatment for anxiety disorders and how that treatment used to be fairly long, 16 months or so, and now it's been shortened. Did you want to comment on how that was achieved?
New compound tested by Dr. Michael Davis at the Emory University, and that research has received much attention, and we are trying to do the same thing for obsessive compulsive disorder, phobia, conditions like that. It really shortens the treatment, much more economical, and treatment effect is very good. So it's, again, it's a more advanced treatment compared to the traditional treatment.
Okay. Other questions? Representative Smith.
Madam Chair, thank you, Dr. Kim. A couple areas, or a couple questions, or possible areas. Number one, the sounds like a marvelous drug. Simply, question is the actual cost to acquire and pay for a month's dosage of the 150 milligrams or whatever the dosage is.
Dr. Kim,
pill is $3 to $5 depending on the drugstore. So that's the actual cost. This drug costs money to manufacture. It's not like a Prozac where it costs no more than 1 cent to produce. This drug is made out of opium. So opium, as you know, is expensive. So this pill is not easy to manufacture. So I think it will always remain high price. But most drugs nowadays cost that much. Like Zoloft, Paxil, they all charge $2 to $3 per pill. So it's not particularly more expensive, although the absolute price is high.
Madam Chair.
Representative Smith.
Doctor, I heard in your testimony that the FDA approved this in 1994, but only at the rate of 50 milligrams per day at that time. Has that changed? And also, why did the FDA approve the drug for at only 50 milligrams per day? What studies did there show, if any, as to the negative side effects, the downfall, the drawbacks, etc.?
Thank you very much, Dr. Kim, for raising that question. That's a really tough scientific question. The reason that was done that way was because the scientists, the researchers previously conducted high-dose naltrexone in patient populations like obesity, Alzheimer's disease, bulimia nervosa. In those studies, when researchers used a high dose, like 200 milligrams a day, 300 milligrams a day, 30% of the patients, their liver enzymes were elevated. So they reported that in the literature. So FDA took that as a fact. What they did not do, looking back, they did not take into account of the fact that many of those patients were using aspirin. In our population, 50% take aspirin or Tylenol or ibuprofen, one of those pain medicines. So if they did, their rate would either disappear or very, very low. So it was because the research was done wrong.
Madam Chair.
Representative Smith.
Doctor, a high enzyme, just that layman's notion, a high enzyme in some part of your body, if you can live with a high enzyme, so be it. But were there any deaths or any permanent damage, physical damage due to the high enzymes in those FDA reports?
Not this Dr. kind Kim. Of enzyme. This kind of enzyme, alcoholics live with those elevated enzymes for a long time. Because heroin addicts, alcohol, you know, if somebody drinks alcohol, this enzyme goes up. So many alcoholics, if you measure their liver enzymes, AST, ALT, they're regularly elevated. So it's not anything permanent or life-threatening, but you know, you don't want to have that. Particularly if it's very high, you don't want to keep it on. There are reasons why that those enzymes are there in the liver. So whenever that happens, we stop the drug right away. And then every time, we haven't seen exception, they all come back to completely normal.
Well, Representative Smith.
One last question. Thank you, Madam Chair. What are the side effects, possible side effects?
Nausea is the most common
Dr.
side.
Kim.
50% of the patients have that. And loose stool also happens for several days. All the side effects, over 95%, I would say, happens during the first week. And then nausea never comes back once the first week is gone.
Thank you.
Are there any other questions for Dr. Kim? Representative Bradley.
Thank you, I'm sure. Dr. Kim, the stories that we heard about successes are really dramatic, and I think you said something about overall effectiveness, but I'm assuming, though, that you have some occasions where there's failure.
Yes.
And I wonder if you could sort of comment when you examine, because I'm assuming as a researcher you also examine those to try to understand why that would be.
Yes, we have.
Dr. Kim.
We do not have all the answers, but we do have some answers. For example, some manic patients gamble. And because manic patients, you know what I mean? They're very euphoric, they're a lot of energy, and they're grandiose, so they buy a lot of things and they go to casino gamble. We found out the patients like that do not respond to naltrexone. And there are patients who do not respond to naltrexone. We found about 10% of the patients do not respond to naltrexone. So naltrexone doesn't work for everybody. And we have documented this in our published papers.
Representative Bradley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Dr. Kim, I don't want to put you on the spot too much, but I just sort of thought as I heard comments from several of the testifiers who had tried so many things and were very skeptical or cynical about some of the standard kinds of therapies. We spend a lot of money, taxpayer money, on many of those sort of standard therapies. And I wonder, I mean, it's a part of your research, if you have any sort of feeling about if you were sort of running human services and trying to invest in these treatment programs, many of which, at least by this anecdotal indication, are not really effective for people. Any advice to us in terms of how we spend our taxpayer money best for trying to help people? Because we're in the business. A lot of these people end up back to us on medical assistance or other programs. And sometimes I fear that we're throwing a lot of money at pretty ineffective programs.
Thank you very much for giving me that opportunity. One of my theories has been that the people, experts, have been trying to treat everyone. And I have not agreed with that. That the modern DSM-4 diagnostic system is imperfect. They are not based on scientific findings. They are based on empirical symptom collection and clinical course studies. This kind of diagnostic system, it has always built-in flaws. Because if you diagnose someone based on etiology, that's the highest level. If you diagnose someone based on pathophysiology, that's the second best. If you diagnose someone based on symptomatologies, you are really in bad shape. Because if you have a cough and chest pain, it can be caused by 20 different diseases. And that's exactly what happens if somebody diagnoses someone based on cough and chest pain. On the other hand, if you discover pneumococcus in the lung, and the diagnosis is final, nobody will disagree. And that's very much is what's happening in psychiatry. So if someone diagnoses someone alcoholic, that I would not ever believe that's all one disease. And that's where I differ from traditional approach. I said craving subset, although primitive as it is, I still thought that was a one step forward. And I believe this is another reason why traditional treatment has survived as long as they have, because it is effective in good number of patients. For example, if I'm a lonely person and I'm getting old, nobody is calling me, I'm all alone, I start to drink. You see, and as I start to drink, I drink more and more. These kind of patients, if they go to group treatment, you know, halfway house, individual treatment, they are likely to improve. And I think for those subset of chemical dependency patients, they deserve those patients. What I have been advocating is a much more biological side. It is the medical, genetic, medical, biological side. No doubt they too have a psychological side to it. But I have been emphasizing biological side where we have been really the major impact in terms of treatment. And in the future, if a state give us opportunity, we know we can save the state a lot of money. I just know it. And a lot of money, not just a little money, because we'll be applying scientifically proven. We're not advocating, oh, you know, Senator, House of Representatives, yes, we can do it. We're not doing it. Please look at my publication. I have been interviewed by science. I mean, in our field, the science is right on the top. If my finding was a low level, they'll never interview me. They'll be crazy to interview a guy like me. I'm a small fish in our field by any standard. But they interviewed me, and they wrote a feature article about my research work. There's a reason. Because we have been now honored through all kinds of, to the highest level of research organizations, including NIH. So when the best of the best scientists approve our research grant, that usually gives a credit that what we're doing has some base. And we've proven it. We published this in a reputable, very high level scientific journal. So we believe we can fix gambling, drinking, compulsive shopping, this kind of, particularly certain sex addicts. I know state has always struggled with it, that we would love to develop some kind of a working relationship with the state. And we are living on shoestring in terms of budget. So we're not used to using huge amount of money. We'll use money wisely and produce a very good result. I'm confident about it.
Representative Otremba. Oh, I'm sorry, Representative Bradley, you had a follow-up.
Sorry. Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Dr. Kim. Sort of one follow-up, and then a lot of this is planting some seeds for follow-up later on. Are the techniques that you use for sort of screening and treatments and all those kinds of things sort of teachable? I mean, the best of all worlds, because we can't send everybody to your program, but are the techniques transportable to programs so people can learn them?
Easily do. In fact, throughout the world, not just in the United States, I'm getting continuous consultation. I just completed a teleconference with the Eli Lilly company. They have a novel craving compound. They are now asking me how to design the study so that their study results would come out positive. And to do that, one has to design the study correctly. And I'm doing it with the Forest Lab, and one Finnish company has been consulting me for a long time. These are new approach. And for that reason, SAMHSA is the service section of NIH. They selected our research as one of the priority research. They thought this is a creative, innovative result, research with just outstanding results. So we get regular input now from throughout the country. And as Madam Chair mentioned earlier, we have been exposed to every major news media in the nation. Time, Newsweek, ABC, USA Today, BBC Television came to us four times now. And I think in time, these methods will have some impact down the road. But it will take time because some company, large company, has to sponsor. But at this time, no one will. But when new compound comes, they will, and then people will get benefit.
Representative Otremba.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you for the presentation. And you've talked about alcohol and shopping and gambling. And I know there are other compulsive cravings. Have you done any research, or has anybody done any studies on sex offenders?
Yes, we have. Yes, and we also have a Dr. Nancy Raymond who specializes in sex addict, and she is very impressed with this new approach. And the one gentleman who really got scared last evening, he called me and said, Dr. Kim, I have to back out. He had a voyeurism, and he's completely stopped. and we can I stop the pedophilia. It again, we cannot stop them all. We have to select only the ones who have a craving, and this craving has to be triggered by strong reward incentive. Like that certain obsessive patients sometimes have a strong craving, but we never use naltrexone because obsessive compulsive craving is triggered by aversive stimulus, something dirty, something they don't like. The naltrexone doesn't work to that condition. It has to be only something good, like sex, the food, things like that. Even then, one has to have a craving, because if you study brain, that's the way brain is wired, and that's where we are applying this medicine. So we have to select the cases carefully to fit into that scheme.
Representative Otremba.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Is it possible to get the PowerPoint of your presentation? Can you email it to us? Or?
Oh, yes. I will send anything to you.
Okay.
Dr. Kim, just a copy of what you presented to us, if you could get that to Andy Gilday, and he would be
sure
to copy it and give it to all of the members.
Could you please remind me through email? Then I'll send
sure.
Thank you.
Representative Huntley.
Madam Chair and Dr. Kim, typically, to get FDA approval, you need phase 1, 2, and 3 trials, and it sounds to me like you've completed phase 2, but since phase 3 might cost $500 million, no company is willing to do that because it's off patent already.
Yeah,
exactly. Is the orphan drug program at FDA do anything for this?
There are companies, for example, there is a medicine called Nalmefen, which is a sister drug of this compound, naltrexone, very similar, except it does not cause liver enzyme elevation. So once that drug comes out, which is highly likely that drug will come out, then it will be a very popular drug. So the company recently had, what is that called, partnership meeting in Frankfurt, Germany, about 40 days ago. 60 companies came forward. They wanted to partner with this company. So people do know how important this line of medication is. I hope that drug comes out. But the naltrexone, highly unlikely.
Representative Huntley.
The orphan drug program FDA won't sponsor phase 3.
I have not seen any company taking up that.
And Dr. Kim, I think we had a little discussion yesterday about some of the programs we fund and the great amount of dollars that we put into our sex offender treatment program. I know that's just one component that you work with, one disorder that you work with. We are so grateful for the testifiers that you brought to at least show the effect and the success of your program. It's hard to get everyone here to give us testimony. Could you provide a little more information, perhaps about whether, I know you mentioned pedophilia, sex offenders, or I mean just those with cravings in that area and how you've worked successfully in that?
Sure.
Could you say a little bit about that right now?
Right now?
Yes.
It's when I wrote my original paper, which was published in 1998, that was about 6 years ago, I made only a brief statement of a sex addict that perhaps it may also be effective for a sex addict. And at that time, I did not really go wild because knowing that sexual circuitry is separate from motivation circuitry, although they are anatomically very close together, they are not in the same place. So for that reason, I was a little bit careful. Then subsequently, I gradually learned. You see, the whole idea of not jumping into drug addiction, like amphetamine addiction, cocaine addiction, it's not because I'm stupid, but they're more complicated disease. I felt like I just learned something, and I had to start from something easy, such as gambling, where people don't use drugs, the brain is still intact. So I wanted to test there first. So we are now moving a little bit forward, including some other, including like a sex that we have tested recently. And we're getting very good results. So I'm really looking forward to learning more about that field, but my knowledge in that area is still very limited. But treatment method, Selection criteria are pretty much the same. We apply same principles.
Okay. Are there any further questions from committee members? I think my committee members would join me in saying thank you for the presentation. I think it was most informative. We wish you continued success in your research and your treatment of people that are benefiting from your research. And we again thank all of you for coming to testify today. With that, thank you, Dr. Kim. You may return to your seat.
Thank you very much to all of you.
Representative Bradley, did you care to comment about the process for House File 1681 as far as that being available to members?
Thank you, Madam Chair. We're still on track to have it available by Thursday noon. We've completed sort of a phase of giving our research people a number of updates and changes. I looked at the idea of doing it strictly by amendments on the original bill, but I think all members who've experienced multiple amendments know how hard it gets to read it. So I will try to present to people not only the new delete all amendment, but as well a kind of a bridge that indicates what the actual changes are in kind of hopefully understandable language. I think you'll find that most of that's fairly straightforward, however. But it should be available to people with all things working right by noon tomorrow.
Okay, so members, noon tomorrow up in fourth floor, the northeast corner, look for House File 1681. And on Monday, it's our hope, at least the committee's hope, that we would have that bill, complete the work on it, and pass it on. There's on your agenda, there are three bills stated on the bottom. That's an intention of what we have to deal with on Monday. Committee is adjourned.